Well, breaking news in two cases. This afternoon, the January 6th committee made good on its promise and subpoenaed former President Donald Trump to appear before that august body, before it likely, if it fall, the House falls into Republican hands, withers away. What should he do? What does it mean? And then came a late-breaking story courtesy of the Detroit News that Ethan Crumbly is going to plead guilty on all 24 charges. Who better to check in with than Todd Flood, attorney and managing partner at Flood Law. Todd, good afternoon. When it rains, it pours.
Yeah, today for sure it did. Good afternoon, Guy.
Good afternoon. So Mr. Trump has suggested he would appear before the committee if he could do it live, and I think he also wanted to do it in prime time. Do you think he will appear before the committee, and would that be a very wise choice?
No and no. So my guess of things is he will stall, delay, do everything he can so that Congress, he sees how the Congress shakes out and how elections shake out so that it all goes away for the subpoena and the investigation in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
That would be point number one. Two, I can't imagine he would want to go in front and have to claim a fifth to anything. Even if, you know, the question is, he's a loose cannon. Is he going to follow his attorney's advice? He may want to go in prime time and doesn't care and let all go through and, you know, roll the dice. But if you were my client, I'd be telling him he's out of his mind just because the potential for prosecution, anything he says can and will be used against him. There's too much out there.
How strong would his legal argument be if he wanted to resist the subpoena and fight it?
We saw what happened with Bannon,
right?
All right. I just read the Bannon's indictment, and he was compelled and dodged, and there was no good reason or legitimate reason for him to just brush it off. And obviously, he didn't file the right objections to get away from it. So there's only a couple, right? And one is privileged communications. And two, there is the fact that he would have his Fifth Amendment and say, no, I'm not coming and I'm claiming the Fifth. That being said, it's interesting. And it reminds me a little bit about the Iran-Contra affair when Oliver North testified.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. attorney at that time mandated that all the FBI agents, CIA agents, and assistant U.S. attorneys be sequestered, be put away into the Watergate Hotel at the time, because the compelled testimony, it's a subpoena, you're compelling a potential subject or target to come in and testify, that would then in turn would potentially taint any possible criminal prosecution, because you can't use that compelled testimony. You can't put that in front of a jury. And then you got to be, you know, the information you use, we just saw this in Flint, right? Part of the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals said to the Flint investigators that violated the privilege, you got to get a taint team and someone new in there to review all the material. You can't take an attorney and a client's privileged communication and use it. Well, here you can't use compelled forced testimony of a target against them. So that's going to be very interesting on how that goes.
So would he have the ability to be questioned by his own attorney, or the January 6th committee in this kind of cockamamie process doesn't allow that?
No. So they would bring in, just like they did with other cases that held this, they would probably bring in some attorney to do the questioning of Trump for the committee. There's plenty of egos up there and there's plenty of lawyers that would want to take that spot anyway. So
sure.
I just don't see it happening, to tell you
right.
The truth. I just see a delay And if I was his attorney, I would tell him no, but I doubt he would listen. He's not going to listen to too many attorneys.
Well, you bring up Oliver North, and it's interesting. There was a guy that turned the tables on the committee and ended up coming off looking pretty good, and maybe that's what Mr. Trump thinks he can do. The irony of this is he's called this committee illegitimate, says they're bogus. If he grants them, and if he appears before them, he's kind of granting them legitimacy, which is more than a little ironic, but then Mr. Trump, in so many ways, is a study in contradictions. I want to get to Ethan Crumbly, guilty to all 24 charges, including terrorism. And the prosecutor apparently has notified the victims of this turn of events. That's David Williams. Is this one of those things where they have managed to get the guilty plea in return for a lighter sentence, or are they just pleading on the nose?
I can tell you this unequivocally, firsthand information. It's pleading on the nose and no deal. Karen McDonald put this deal together herself with her team. Let's hold our breath here. This is a 15, 16-year-old kid. I mean, it's supposed to take place on Monday. Anything can change. I've had cases where it's changed when the person's been up at the podium trying to enter the plea, right? But as of right now, cross our fingers, everybody in the state and everybody in the county, cross our fingers that this plea goes through. And it's as charged. There's no sentence agreement. There's no lesser char or term that's been put into contemplation with this plea. That is going to fall upon the courts. And, you and I spoke in, I think, July or August. I can't remember, but it was when our Michigan Supreme Court came out with the two cases that talked about, the development of the brain and how judges must look at the case, how they must sentence the case. So there's two parts to this. There's the plea and then there's the sentence. And sentencing a juvenile to life in prison without parole, right, is not going to be something that is easy or possible to do without, you're not going to get something without parole, but a life sentence is going to be very difficult. The burden is on the prosecutor to show that this young man, he has irreparable corruption within his brain. There is no way he can be repaired, and that the factors are going to come on to once the defense puts factors out there, that's going to be weighed by the judge to see if he dies in prison. That's going to be the case. So it's all about sentencing.
The best part of this, the blessing in all of this, is that the surviving victims who were terrorized that day and survived will not be required to testify or relive it in any way, which
we can thank
the Lord for that. Will this in any way impact the charges against the parents?
Yeah, so that's going to be a great strategy, right? So for the parents, this is a modicum of hope for them, because I still think, after I listen and look at the facts and the evidence in this case, that the parents are culpable here for providing this gun to this young man, knowing that he was in this deranged state and not having it safely put away. And, there is good precedence out there that these parents are, I think, criminally responsible on many, many levels.
Yeah.
Those are facts that need to come. But does it help? Yeah, it does, because they get to point the finger and they get to say, hey, this person over here, I apologize for, his breakdown and all that. And they get to,
right,
they're going to do the plan B, right?
Right.
Plan B, it was him. We have nothing to do with it.
He is now charged guilty. Todd, I appreciate your time. Two pieces of breaking news. I blindsided you on this. We appreciate you coming in. Take care.